and welcome to episode 1288 of The Sleeper and the Bust. It is Thursday, April 25th. I'm your host, Paul Spohr, joined this afternoon by Justin Mason. Justin, good afternoon, sir.
Good morning for me.
It's still morning for you. That's right. It's that.
Just for about 20 more minutes.
Crossover time there. Yeah, about 11:40 for you. 19 years sober for the man. Is that today?
That is today.
It is congratulations, my sobriety birthday, brother.
19 years. Thank you. Went and got my my chip and enjoying the fact that for the 19th year in a row, I've been draft eligible in the NFL draft and not gotten drafted.
Tonight could be the night.
You never know, right?
Tonight could be the night, man. I'm holding out hope for you. You know, I don't know how many picks my Lions have. I haven't looked at everything yet, but I'm holding out hope for you tonight.
Washington's got a ton of picks.
Your Commanders could take you, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they could ruin the lives of 10 young people. It's going to be really fun.
A lot of lives ruined tonight. A little bit of a shorter one on Thursday. As you just kind of plan for those, y'all. They're going to be like a little bit shorter on Thursdays. But I have a fun topic for us. We're going to talk about some players and kind of figure out, maybe make our decision a little early here. Obviously, it is still very early. It's April 25th. As to whether or not this is a superstar breakout or a fast start. We got some guys that are doing some big things right now. Do we believe it can really hold? And to what level, right? If we say yes, it doesn't mean they have to be this guy the rest of the way. They can still come, you know, if they're toting like a 2.25 WRC plus, I don't even know if anybody's that high, but you know what I mean? Like, it can still come down and be the full-scale breakout, but I want to see where we're at. In fact, nobody does have 225. 208 for Shohei Ohtani is insane. He's basically two
I've heard he's pretty good
players. I mean, it's unreal, yeah. And Betts at 205. So those two on the same freaking team.
The Dodgers may be insane.
They're halfway decent. The funny thing is they haven't even really kicked into gear yet. They're kind of treading water at 15-11. And, you know, they'll get pieces back health-wise. They'll probably add pieces as the season goes because now they have like 14 catchers in their system that they can easily trade since they signed Will Smith to a long deal. It's absolutely nuts. And then we'll get into some mailbag questions. Depending on time, it might just be one, but we're definitely going to get into one for sure. And then we got a couple others that we might get into as well. But let's start with these breakouts. And let's start with somebody that you really loved last year. I can't recall 100% where you were this year with regards to drafting him now that the price skyrocketed, but your boy CJ Abrams had the big breakout last year. I saw some dumbass, Powell Sparrer, put him on his fantasy busts chart. Ugh. Who is this dweeb, dude? Who is this freaking geek, dude? He has Ellie De La Cruz there, too. No, clearly I was not paying. My biggest issue was that even when Abrams was busting out last year with all the steals, the bat was pretty pedestrian at a 752 OPS. Fine. You know, if he's good, if he's awesome this year, cool. I truly, and I'm not saying this just to like counter that I might be wrong, but if Abrams and Ellie really do break out this year, great. I would love to. I'll watch them every night. I already watch like every Reds game. They are can't miss baseball for me. So I'll gladly be wrong on them. But I was out on Abrams at his price point, which was like third, fourth round. But he's coming out swinging. In fact, the steals aren't even really there yet. 4 for 6, which is fine. But it's the 6 bombs and 10-13 OPS that has Abrams running sky high right now as the 21st player on our player radar right now. Is this a superstar breakout in the making? Or just a fast start and he's going to kind of mellow out and be good but not great or even bad if you think there's going to be a total flop. Where are you at on your boy Abrams? And did you get any shares this year? I can't recall if we've discussed that.
I think I've got one or two kind of early shares before the price really got kind of crazy. I couldn't rationalize taking him in the third or fourth rounds of drafts.
It was tough, man.
It was, I loved him. I mean, he is the main reason why I won my auction championship league last year because somebody dropped him like at the beginning of June and I picked him up and he went on to just like absolutely kill it, you know, stealing.
Which as we've pointed out, that was a viable drop. Even with the obviously the benefit of hindsight, you say you don't drop him. But at the time when you're analyzing things, he was in the 600s with his OPS. Nothing really doing there for CJ Abrams, even in a 15 teamer. What are you holding on for? If it was sometime in mid-June, he's toting a 6.25 OPS hitting 215 with, it's taking forever to load, but like a handful of stolen bases. Who knew he was going to rip like 35 SBs the rest of the way. So I don't even roast the people that cut him. There was a sound process there. He just happened to pop off. But then the price rises from waiver scoop to third, fourth round foundational player. We both bow out. What is it looking like now, 3-4 weeks in?
So can he continue to do similar things to this? Like, I think he can, because I think he showed it last year. I mean, from pretty much like middle of June on, he was unbelievable, right? And he's doing it again, and he's doing it very much in the same way, which is like being an aggressive swinger. He is walking more, but I think the walk rate is actually really, if anything's going to fall apart, it's the walk rate. Because, I mean, he's swinging outside the zone 46% of the time. Like, he is not being patient. He's actually being more patient in the zone, which is actually weird that he's being rewarded for that with a really high batting average. I honestly think he's probably closer to a 260 hitter than he is a 300 hitter.
Okay.
I'm not, like, a massive believer in CJ Abrams' power. You know, the max exit velocity, which of course can change, you know, quickly, is 3 miles an hour lower than last year. But even like if you just look at the average exit velocity, it's up like a mile per hour. It's in a pedestrian range, 88 miles an hour average exit velocity. I think he's getting lucky. He does make good contact in the zone. So when he does swing in the zone, he makes good contact. So I do think that he can outrun, you know, like a complete cratering of like a batting average. But to me, like I think, like I said, I think he's 260, 270 hitter. I think he will steal bases at a prodigious rate at some point. It's hard when you're just jogging around them to steal them. Like they don't let you steal bases when you're on your home run trot. But I think that the power comes back down to earth a little bit. I still think he's maybe like a 15 to 20 home run hitter with, you know, 45 plus stolen bases. But the batting average around 260. So I think he's going to be really, really good. I don't think people are going to, you know, call him a bust at the end of the year, but he's not this good.
Okay. And I think that's fair with CJ Abrams that he's not going to stay at this level. 22% homer to fly ball rate, essentially 2X what he did last year at 11%. In fact, literally 2X. You got to figure that that's going to come down for some of the reasons that you said, where he's not really striking the ball that much better. His barrel rate is up though, so that certainly helps. But yeah, this just seems like some run hot right now with the 6 bombs in 91 plate appearances. Projections have him for about 15, 16 more homers and upper 20s to low 30s more stolen bases.
Yeah.
So then you're looking at like 22, 35, and they have him for about a upper 250s, low 260s average the rest of the way. Now, let me add those two, like, let me add that to what he's already done. Let me give him the most favorable one, which is Steamers 261. Let me do that really fast here. It's 154 hits.
That probably gets him to, like, 278.
266 average is what it would be.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. So, if it's a 266 average with 22 homers and 35 steals, where would you be on CJ Abrams as the third, fourth round pick? How would you feel there?
I think that's fine. Like, I mean, honestly, I think that's...
I would say that probably worked out.
Yeah, it probably worked out pretty well. So, like, I mean, if he can... My question becomes, like, in order to get those 30-plus stolen bases, like, does he need to stop hitting for that power? Because he's not going to walk a ton the rest of the way. You know, especially with swinging outside the zone more. Yeah, it's like, I think some of those stolen bases are coming at the cost of like these extra base hits. So, and I would project him to stop getting so many homers. Like I think the power projection right the way is a little bit high.
That's the part that I'm thinking, right? Like, is he going to get to 22 for Abrams? Like
he's at 6 right now, which is insane. Like I could bring up my projections probably fairly quickly. So let me see if I can. I bet you I only projected him for like 15 home runs and he's already at 6. So like my projection is already off. Let's see. I'll just sort by stolen bases because he's got to be towards the top of that. Dun, dun, dun.
Sorry, I should be filling in that gap there. I was typing out something real fast. But yeah, I'm looking at, you know, I'm just, this is probably just a hot run here. And no one's extrapolating this, right, with C.J. Abrams, which I do appreciate. Even his biggest proponents aren't out there saying, oh my God, I think I'm going to get 30-40 this year, which is good. But I wonder if you're getting six of a 16-17 homer set, not six homers with 16-17 more in the tank. And
yeah, I projected him for 14 home runs and 40 stolen bases with a .249 batting average.
And while it is hard sometimes to divorce yourself from the fact that, well, he already had six right now, why can't he hit another 14 from here? Like, I get that, but it's probably more prudent to say that this is six of the 14, 15, 16. And then, you know, if he does go all the way with it, you can be more excited about C.J. Abrams. So yeah, I think there's some validity to this in terms of he could end up getting, okay, let's bring it back down then. 17, 30, 260. Is that worth your third, fourth round pick?
Yeah, I think it is.
So then you're still pretty comfortable with what you're getting there. What did you put him for? 15, 14 and what with Abrams?
14 and 40.
With what batting average?
249.
Okay, maybe that's where you fell short. Because I was going to say, 14-40, maybe you should have taken him in third, fourth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I probably should have. He was on the cusp. And like I said, I did end up with him in a few leagues.
Mm-hmm. Before he really jumped up, right? Because he was still more like sixth through eighth early on, if I recall correctly, on Abrams' price.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm a little bummed I didn't get more of him, but, you know.
He's also running hot right now. If he was hitting 114 with a homer. I also have him in
dynasty leagues and things like that. So, like, I'm getting a little bit of love here.
Next up is Josh Naylor. Now, for me, Josh Naylor's big breakout opportunity is simply staying healthy. I think if he can reach 550, 600 plate appearances, he just needs to be the guy he's been the last 2 years. That said, he's off to a fast start with six bombs, a 169 WRC plus, which is yielding a wonderful slash line. No steals yet, and that's not a big part of his game, but he is usually good for like 6, 7, 8. He had 10 last year, which was nice. I'm not worried about that part. Can Josh Naylor come through with a big breakout and go, you know, 36, 300 type of guy? Is that something that's in the cards for Naylor?
I mean, I think it is if he stays healthy. I think you're right that the biggest issue for him for Josh Naylor is the health aspect. It also, I mean, is to kind of continue the gains we saw last year in terms of hitting versus lefties. And so far he's doing that. He's hitting like 364 versus left-handed pitching, though he is running a 400 BABIP against them. So, I mean, that's probably going to come down as well. But, I mean, last year he hit 299 versus left-handed pitching, and they started to really let him play, especially towards the end of the season, versus left-handed pitching. And they're continuing that this year. So I think the combination of he has made, you know, clear improvements versus left-handed pitching, and now he is, you know, he's healthy right now. If he can stay healthy, I think he is up for a breakout. This is a guy that I do wish I had gotten more shares of. He wasn't a big target for me because there was a part of me that was afraid that maybe last year he was just, you know, kind of lucky against left-handed pitching, and that's the reason why. Because let's see, I guess I probably shouldn't have. His BABIP was only 308 versus left-handed pitching, so maybe I should have been a little bit more on board. I think I missed the boat a little bit on Josh Naylor. He was not a target for me. He should have been.
Yeah, and he's somebody I've liked in the past too, and he just got caught up there where I just wasn't going for him. And that happens sometimes. You can love a guy and you just, you know, maybe not love, right? And I think Jeff Erickson will call this out sometimes when someone says, I love the guy. It's like, well, maybe not, because you don't have him anywhere. If you loved him, you'd have him somewhere. So I like Josh Naylor. I think he's good. But I think I missed the boat too, because I really do believe. And what I love, this is usually the profile I love, when the skills are locked and loaded and all you're really hoping for is the playing time. Like, you're only wishing on health, which can be tough too. It doesn't mean it's going to come through. But the breakouts, when you need a guy to do this X, Y, and Z at the dish, those are the tough ones, right? Oh, you need Ellie De La Cruz to take more walks, to be better and swinging outside the zone, et cetera, which, by the way, he's doing all of that. But, like, those are harder. With Josh Naylor, it's like, be Josh Naylor, but please be Josh Naylor for 140 plus games, and I'm getting a stud. And I think the biggest miss for both of us, that since we did like him, was the fact that at his price point, he could have just repeated and it wouldn't have killed us. Like, we didn't really even need him at pick 135 to be that much better. Like, he can live just being himself, and then there was the upside baked in. I had other targets at first base that I ended up going for.
There were so many guys at first that were going later that I was just like, why take Josh Naylor in the top 150 or so when I can get, you know, 30 picks later, I can get Pascantino.
Vinny P. I knew you were going to say him because I'm right there with you. And he's doing fine, by the way.
Right? Yeah. Like, remember when everybody wrote him off?
I don't even want to say he got off to a slow start, because I don't believe that. It was 10 games that weren't good. I don't consider that a slow start. But yeah, people were asking about, do I cut Vinny P? And now he's at 4 homers and a 130 OPS plus. So we could get a very Josh Naylorian type production from Vinny P, just without the speed.
You know what the crazy thing is with Josh Naylor is that he's actually getting unlucky.
Really?
His BABIP is a little bit low. Like, his XBA is like 336 right now. Like, he's actually getting a little unlucky. So
he,
like,
will fight all, the ball.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and you know he'll stab someone. He's done it before.
Absolutely. Himself. Unfortunately. I cannot
think about Josh Naylor. No, it wasn't himself. He stabbed a teammate.
Oh, it was Adam Eaton who stabbed himself trying to open a DVD. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yeah. You see Josh Naylor on the field. Are you terribly surprised that he stabbed somebody?
No, but I cannot think of Josh Naylor without thinking about that story of him stabbing his teammate in the minors.
That is really, really insane, right?
You know, like, how he got another chance on two different organizations is mind-blowing me. But, I mean, I guess sometimes talent overcomes.
Exactly. And it explains why he's on different organizations too, right?
Exactly.
Who did he stab? Do we remember?
I honestly don't remember. It was, they called it a prank gone wrong.
Oh yeah. That's exactly what it was. It was Stone Garrett.
Oh,
you know, a name player here.
Yeah.
Wow. That is crazy. Not many details here. Just prank gone wrong, like you said. I guess, like, we don't know. But if that's what it is, and that was acceptable enough that, you know, he's still in the league and
they did and all that, trade him, like, right away too, though. Like, it was like he stabbed the guy and then he was not on, it was the Marlins.
Yeah,
the Marlins again. He was on, I mean, San Diego.
You know, what the fuck is a knife prank?
Yeah, that was always my question.
It's like, in the quote here. Yeah. Knife prank. Yeah, I'm trying to figure this. I'm not getting much other info, but we don't have enough time to dive into the quote-unquote knife prank. I'm in on a Josh Naylor breakout. I really do believe that, again, even if it doesn't come through, you're fine, even with what you paid, but you could really have something here, like a 30-10, 300 type of season with good runs and ribbies, especially if Cleveland keeps going, because I know people are kind of, not everyone, but there are some people out there that are like, oh, they're frauds, they're not going to stick around. Not at this clip, 17-7, but I think they're still going to be good. And I think the offense could actually carry this year. We know them as a pitching organization, but with Bieber out, Gavin Williams just had a setback. McKenzie's wrecked. Like, it could be Tanner Bibee and a merry band of idiots, but the hitting could absolutely sustain them. You know, Ramirez hasn't even gotten going yet. Naylor's been cooking. Jimenez looks better. Kwan looks excellent, although he'll probably smooth out. You know, he'll have his ebbs and flows where all the hits are falling and then they aren't for a little while and then they're falling again. You know, Esteban Florial has been out of nowhere excellent so far. And Gabriel Arias, David Fry, like, they got some guys. They got some guys who can hit. So I like Naylor. I think he's a stud. I would certainly hang on to him. I'd even buy high, because I don't think you have to pay more than draft price. I think you could get him for something in a top 150 pick type range. Here's one. This is for your ball club here, so I'm sure you're keyed in on what Patrick Bailey's been doing. But for those that aren't, he's having a hell of a start to the season. It's 71 plate appearances, so it could go south in a hurry. But so far, 300, 371, 483 with two bombs and a steal. We're not putting much weight in the steal. That could be his lone one for the year, or maybe 3-4, whatever. But the big batting average, maybe some punch. Are we seeing something here from 25-year-old Patrick Bailey?
Yeah, and he even said, like, after the game where he stole that base, like, it was like they saw the who the pitcher was on the mound and
took advantage,
and that the pitcher was not paying attention to him at all. So he just took off. Like,
is that how Rhys Hoskins got a steal today? I'm just looking at this right now.
It might be. So, I mean, I think what Patrick Bailey is doing is somewhat legitimate. I don't think he's going to hit 300, but I do think that he's kind of naturally like a 270, 280 kind of hitter.
I think that behind the dish.
He's a really good hitter. You know, in terms of like zone contact, doesn't swing outside the zone, 11% swing and strike rate. You know, and he just kind of knows what he's doing. The real big gain for me is the walk rate. Like, when I saw him last year, I was like, man, this guy should draw more walks. I don't know why he doesn't. And so seeing the 10%, it's actually 11% walk rate with a lowered a strikeout rate, I think is more in line with what he should have done last year. So this all feels very believable for me. He's never going to be a big power guy. He doesn't elevate the ball a ton, but he's kind of a gap hitter who can get on base with a walk as well. And will provide a good average. So, like, for me, he was a huge target as kind of like a low end C2.
Yeah.
And I'm probably moving towards the top end of that C2 territory.
Totally agree with that on Patrick Bailey. I co-sign. And to your point about being more of a gap god, 30s in all the line drive, ground ball, fly ball, just kind of almost an even split, 33 line drive, 36 ground ball, 31 fly ball. So he's playing into those gaps and he's a switch hitter. So in San Francisco, sometimes he's going to have to deal with that tough right field. Other times he might go yard in left field because that's a little bit easier, but he can shoot those gaps and just go crazy, you know, getting doubles, maybe even some triples because he's not totally slow. He's not fast. He's not fast at all. But if you hit it into that triples alley, I could get a triple in San Francisco. So you might even see some random triples from Patrick Bailey just based on how well he hits.
Reagan's, I know, you're watching
Reagan's.
Yeah,
that's unfortunate right now. I wasn't sure if this one was even going to get played. And now they're, I mean, the rain is coming down, but they're going to get through five at least. Like, this is going to be a game. It's only two. It's only 2-1.
You know, I know, but it's bases loaded, one out. So
he's a ground ball away from getting out of this. Look at the positive, Justin. For God's sakes, you're 19 years sober. Let's look at positives today.
I didn't get here by staying positive. I got here by being afraid of everything.
He's a ground ball away from getting out of this sucker. We'll see. We'll see if that happens. All right. Next up on our list here, you knew we had to do a Baltimore guy. And we talked a lot about Colton Cowser when he did his big breakout week. So I figure it'd be excess to kind of repeat on him. And I think we both said that we believe that he's awesome, but maybe not to the level that he was doing. But what about Jordan Westberg? I feel like he's always kind of underrated a bit. In this class of amazing prospects that they have. And yet here he is with 5 homers, 4 steals already, 310, 370, 571. He's been on fire through 93 plate appearances. Is it real? Can Jordan Westberg be in the midst of a superstar breakout or just a nice fast start?
I think this is just a nice fast start. He is striking the ball better, right? He's got a 12% barrel rate. The average exit velocity is up quite a bit. So every ball he's hitting is hitting hard. And 58%.
Yeah. Sorry. That's up 13 points from last year.
So he is hitting the ball harder. He's making less contact while doing so. So I don't think that the batting average is going to sustain itself. And I worry that he's not a guy that's got prodigious power necessarily. And in that park in Baltimore, I know he's got 5 home runs, 4 stolen bases so far, hitting 310. It's all looking great. I'm not saying he's going to be bad. I'm not going to say he's going to fall apart. But when we talked about him earlier on in draft season, I kind of said, like, hey, I think this guy's an accumulator, and I just don't know what the, you know, situation is going to be like in Baltimore when they start bringing up prospects playing time. I think his playing time is now safe. Jackson Holliday looks completely overmatched. So even if they bring up Coby Mayo, I think that Jackson Holliday would be the one who went down or lost playing time.
Hey, maybe they weren't wrong to send him out.
Maybe not. So, I mean, he is super, super young. I think Jackson Holliday is going to be fine long term. But
oh, absolutely. By the way, I'm not implying anything to the contrary, just so we're
clear. Clearly, he just needs a little bit more seasoning down in the minors. So I think Westbrook is going to be good. And I think he, but I still think he's an accumulator. I still don't think that he is like a superstar. And I think some people are looking like, so NFBC just announced they're going to start doing kind of gladiator drafts, like rest of the season gladiator drafts, in season starting, I think next week, on Wednesdays and Thursdays. So I think they're standalone leagues. I don't think there's any sort of overall or anything because they're only doing like two or three a week. But watch out for Jordan Westbrook to be going in like the top six or seven rounds. I think that's a huge mistake. Like I think
that's the beauty. Go ahead.
I was gonna say, I think we definitely underrated him.
But now it can swing back the other way.
But now it's going to swing back the exact opposite way, which is like he is not going to be a guy who like is a superstar, in my opinion.
I think that's fair. I am on the fence here, so I'm going to lean no because I'm going to stick with my preseason, you know, my priors, if you will. I've always wanted to use that phrase. I'll stick with my priors. I don't even know what the fuck that means, but I will stick with mine. I love the 5-4, but if you had him down for, say, maybe you had Westbrook down for 17 homers, 10 steals, well, I think 5-4 are out of that. I don't think that that's now pushing up to 22-10 or something like that. So yeah, I think it's a hot run. The plate skills aren't particularly strong. You mentioned that, you know, he is striking the ball very well, but that will come down too. So
yeah,
I agree with you that he extended the leash on if he does have a cold snap, he's not just going to be down right away and Kobe Mayo comes up. They can give Jordan Westbrook a nice long look. He could struggle a bit and not just have to be looking over his shoulder, which is nice comfort for a player, I imagine. But I think he's just off to a great start of what could be a solid season. By the way, it looks like Cole Reagan's really dealing with footing issues. He keeps going back, looking at the mud on his feet, keeps trying to scrape it off, and the little scraper is caked.
Something about causing... Toronto. Toronto was the team he fell down against last year.
Yes, but that was in Toronto, but this is the rain here. Yeah, he's cursed against this team, but he has a chance to get out of this. It's two outs and still only one run in. If he can get Kirk out, unfortunately, he's a big contact guy, so I can't imagine pitching in the rain. Like, I never pitched enough to declare myself a pitcher on any level, so I have no real experience there. I just think, as particular as pitchers are, pitching in the rain seems like an effing nightmare. Like, as particular as you got to be about
playing baseball in the rain in general, it seems like, because it's not like, at least football, you're running around constantly.
Yeah
like
such a feel game, football, right?
No, it's not. But I mean, like, I remember, so I mean, I went to like boarding school for like early part of high school and in middle school, and it was in Northwestern Connecticut. And like, we were a second half football team because we didn't have a visiting team locker room. But like, I hated, because I was mostly a defensive player, I hated like having to sit on the sidelines when the offense was going. Like, so I couldn't imagine just like standing out in the outfield while it's raining and cold and stuff like
that. And you know how I feel about cold weather.
Yeah, no, you wouldn't be able to. I mean, you think 70 is cold weather. He got out of it. Oh my God, he did get out of it.
It can be with the wrong type of wind. But I used to be more conditioned to it. You know, we would have travel baseball tryouts in fucking February. In March, and so that was never particularly fun. But anyway, let's move on. Jordan Westbrook, we're leaning no on the real superstar breakout coming through. This one's more fantasy breakout, because I think that Bryce Tarang's batting line could come way down, but if he steals 50, then that is a breakout. He has 12 steals so far, two homers, and a great hitting line. It is there right now. But I think you can even make some exceptions for him where, even if you think the hitting line, not craters, but like comes way down, like let's say he hits his projection the rest of the way, which is an 80 WRC plus. You could feasibly say that he does that and still has a fantasy breakout if it also comes with 30 plus steals. But where are you? Because the 12 for 12 on the bases with the hot plate skills and the great slash line so far has Bryce Tarang looking excellent. Is this a breakout or fast start, pun intended, since he's running like crazy?
I mean, I think it's both. He's got a 95% zone contact. I mean, that is.
Do like you just look at that at night
and like
in private time and have?
Yeah, I uploaded a video to, you know, the what black and yellow site with just Bryce Terang making contact.
I can't watch that in Texas. I can't access that site anymore.
No.
Not that I would know. I've heard that. No, I didn't try to. No, I'm not even sure I know what site you're talking about. But yeah, I did not try to. I was told that you cannot.
So, I mean, I think this is a breakout. Now, is he going to hit 300? No, I don't think he's going to hit 300. Like, his XBA is around, like, 265-ish, I want to say.
So, again, his projection from here forward by all the projection systems is about an 80 WRC+, plus, which translates to about mid-240s batting average, low 300s OBP, and mid to upper 300s slug. Do you think Bryce Terang is going to be better than that the rest of the way?
I do think he's going to be better. I think he's probably like a 260 to 270 hitter. I mean, when you're putting, and I know a lot of his contact is on the ground, but when you're fast, you're going to outrun that. You're going to find holes. When you're putting the ball in play, you give yourself the opportunity to get lucky.
That breeds base knocks.
Yeah, absolutely. And then he's also walking at an almost 10% clip. So, like, those stolen bases are going to come. Like, he could steal 50 bases. It would not surprise me. And he's a really good defender. So, like, he's not going to lose playing time, you know. And right now, Milwaukee's good. Like, I sold Milwaukee short. Like, I don't know that they're going to stay this good.
You did.
But I absolutely sold them short with the way they've started the season. Now, there's still a lot of questions in that rotation, in that bullpen.
Agreed. So I don't want to victory lap too hard. I like Milwaukee, though. But 15 and 8 is definitely surprising even for me. But I just I like what they do over there, man. Yeah. And they're the third highest team in stolen bases this year. So to your point about Terang continuing to run, like, that's still going to come, even when the batting average dries up a bit. But if he's in 260, 270 with a 350 OBP, 340 even, that's getting on base way more than enough to keep the bases churning. So I'm excited about Terang if I've got him. I will say, and I don't say this to like diss Jason Martinez, who runs Roster Resource, but I was off the Terang train because we had him as like a bench guy with the potential to get knocked out.
There was a lot of talk. It wasn't just Jason. There was a lot of talk that he wasn't going to make the opening day roster.
Yeah, and because like Jason doesn't just make that up. So the news there, and I always reference Roster Resource. I'm like, oh, I don't even know if this guy's going to make the team. I'd rather go for Joey Ortiz than Bryce Terang. Well, it turns out both of them made the team. So they got a great infield defense between Terang, Adamas, Ortiz. What a set there. I don't know how good Jake Bowers is over at first. That's who's playing there right now. But like the other three infielders, and that helps the pitching, by the way, too, right? Because it is Freddie Peralta and a merry a band of idiots.
Yeah. Wade Miley, we hardly knew ye.
I know, like, he got hurt right away. But those bombs are... they're getting boosted by that brilliant defense. So that certainly helps. But yeah, I like Terang. I would stick with him if you got him, that you found a stolen base gem. Unless you're flush with SBs, then you could dangle him out there and see what you can get. All right, our last one here, our boy, Michael Busch. First off, he has been our boy over the years, but I'm gonna back away from the our boy a little bit in that I didn't get him enough. I was foolishly worried about getting Mervis again. And I know I shouldn't have let that affect me, but I did. And so I have one Michael Busch share. Now, I don't have a ton of leagues, but I have one for a guy that I think I had seven of last year. So I still love him. I'm rooting for him, but I can't claim my boy too heavily when I don't have enough Michael Busch shares. But he's got six bombs and a 148 WRC plus. What are we looking at with our boy Michael Busch? Is it the breakthrough? Is he going to hit? I think for the breakthrough, we got to go 30 bombs. Is he going to do that?
I think he is. I mean, he's got above average zone contact. He's swinging outside the zone just a little bit over a quarter of the time. Only 11% swinging strike rate, you know, 45% hard hit rate, and 18% barrel rate.
oh my God.
Like, yeah, I mean, I know he was running like a 300. And Adam Free. Oh, I thought Adam Bridger had a home run. I was like, oh my God, no.
I looked up and saw it too.
The way, got me.
Yep. The way they were looking at it, it looked like they were. Yeah. No, he was just tracked it down. But yeah, so Michael Busch.
Putting the world's earth on the mound. Right now. Trying to try it.
Busch been running hot. I mean, he's a three true outcomes guy, right? 11% walk rate, 33% K rate, and gobs upon gobs of power. Playing time is locked and loaded. You think he can go 30. being part of this team, can he go 30-90? This is a solid Cubs team, no?
I think he can. Like, the question is, like, how much do they let him hit against left-handed pitching?
True.
You know, like, I think that can limit the upside. But, I mean, what he can do, and, like, he's hit lefties, you know, halfway decently, I believe, this year. I'm going to double-check that before I just...
While you're checking that, I'm going to see how often he's playing against the lefties, because that's...
He's struggling. He's not playing very much. He's only gotten 11 plate appearances versus lefties.
Yeah, he's only started two of the five games against lefties for Michael Bush. But that's okay. Like, that doesn't kill you. He can still hit 30. It might cut into the counting categories for Bush.
Yeah, for sure. So, but I mean, I think he should be rostered just about every league. Like, it's, I mean, I guess 10 teams, it's hard to roster guys who are platooning unless it's a daily lineup.
Check the schedule then. And if they have one or zero lefties, then you get Michael Bush in, because 30 plus power. I mean, I know 10 teamers got talent, but 30 plus power with 280 kind of average, because I think he could hit for a decent average, because he strikes the ball so well that I think he can hit. He strikes out a lot, though, so maybe 270 is better, but I'll take 3270 in a 10 teamer too. I don't think you're throwing that on the wire.
I don't know that he's gonna strike out at the rate that he has so far. I know it's been you know, a 33% strikeout rate so far, but like, he makes really good contact in the zone. He doesn't swing outside of it. Like, I think he's actually going to, you know, and like I said, the swing strike rate, I think, is around 11%. Like,
yeah,
I think he's probably a 25% strikeout guy, which is fine. Like, for a power hitter like that, like, I will totally take that. No, I'm totally a buyer. Like, you and I talked about, I can't remember if we talked about it on air or not, but like, somebody in one of my dynasty leagues where I've got Michael Bush offered me Jesus Luzardo, and I need pitching in that league. And I turned it down. Like, I was close. I was, you know, because I really do need pitching. But I don't like Luzardo that much, though I did trade for him in another trade. I just gave up a first round, you know, first year player draft pick for him. So, but I held on to Michael Bush.
I think that makes sense. Like, I wouldn't have wanted to do that either. And I'm not even fully out on Luzardo or anything. I just think you could be looking at 35 bombs. Let's not get too crazy. It is early. We're not going to start extrapolating everything. But again, this is a guy we've loved for years. He finally got his opportunity. It is one of those things similar to the Burns deal for the O's, where they barely felt the what they gave up in Hall and Ortiz. The Dodgers don't blink giving up Bush, but that doesn't mean that the Cubs didn't get a badass power hitter. So I'm very excited about Bush. I also think that we are witnessing his breakout here. I think he's going to hit 30 with a solid batting average too. All right, let's finish up with a really good question that we got the other day. Basically just asking, what do we do for our daily fantasy prep? Like, what do you check? How to get a player before he heats up? Like, what do you go through on the day to day? Now, you're in like 712 leagues, so your day to day is even tougher than what I go through. Well, why don't you start taking me through some of the stuff that you do on a given day to kind of get everything situated?
So I think I've said this before, but one of the things that has actually helped my day to day prep is playing DFS, because you need to kind of be in tune with exactly what's going on. And obviously I write a daily article over on FanGraphs for the Roto write-up, which kind of helps, kind of keeps me in tune. I'm really looking for core skills. What just happened? Oh no.
Wait till you see that catch. Yeah, you are.
Okay.
It's positive. It's positive, but you're going to see something awesome. Sorry.
All right. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa up 2-1 pitch. Oh, fastball top of the zone. Oh my God. Oh my God. Kyle Isbell, you are a god.
Yes, he is, dude. That was so sick. Sorry, y'all. I know, probably annoying for some people when we're watching games.
That was a little bit shades of the Hunter Renfro catch where he just threw his hand up and
exactly. Because he kind of overran it and he's like, oh shit. And
that will be leading off the Roto write-up tonight. That for sure.
I love Kyle Isbell, and those uniforms are so clean. But yeah, anyway, so you mentioned DFS. I'm obviously a big OOTP guy. We talk about that all the time. Yeah. We have a game in our game called PT Live, which is essentially a DFS type of thing. You get points based off of players' real life performance. So the same thing there, where me checking that lineup first thing in the morning helps key me in on the goings on. And so for the daily lineup leagues, that will help me. Oh, okay, I got to take this guy out, or I got to go see if he's doing what and whatnot. So do you start your day by doing a DFS lineup or your DFS article the night before?
I don't do articles anymore for DFS, but
We do the road write up,
which gets you in tune. Usually the night before, one, I'm looking at, like, you know, what handed pitchers hitters are going against, right? Mm-hmm. Like, for me, like, you know, obviously you want to try to maximize your, you know, righties versus lefties, your lefties versus righties. The other thing I kind of do early on in the season, you don't have to sort by last 30 days or anything like that, because we're still in the first 30 days.
It's just what we've got right now.
Exactly. But throughout the season, like, I'll shorten the time frames, either down to 14 or 30 days. Same. And what I'll go over to Fangraphs. I'll go to the leaderboard. I'll sort by whatever, you know, versus lefties versus righties or last 30 days. And I go to the core skills. I'm looking at zone contact. I'm looking at O swing. I'm looking at barrel percentage. And I'm just kind of seeing what names pop up to the top of the list on a lot of those charts. One of the reasons why I thought, like, say, a Suzuki, you know, after his rookie season was going to be kind of a big guy is because he was the only qualified hitter in baseball that had a top 25 zone contact and a top 25 barrel percentage, right? I want guys who are making contact in the zone and barreling it up when they do. And so those are kind of the things I start to really look for. And you just look for names that kind of pop out of nowhere.
I also like to look, this is more when you're in your league and you're looking at free agents. When you talk about those time sorts, the 30 days, 14 days, 7 days, I start with plate appearances. Who's playing?
Yeah. Yep.
Particularly, again, when you're talking about free agents, I don't do that when I go to the Fangraphs board like you're talking about, because you're going to get all the superstars up there and you don't need to know that Mookie Betts has the most plate appearances or whatever. But when you're in your free agents and you're looking like who's playing, and then do I buy it? Do I think they deserve that PT? I typically
sort by hits. So
I do the PA first or AB if that's what they have, and then hits next, and then runs after that. Those are the first three I start with just to kind of see.
Yeah, I mean, for me, batting average is always something I'm trying to stay mindful of, right? Like, absolutely. I just want guys who are, you know, and if they're leading in hits, that means they're probably playing a lot because you don't get to lead in hits. You know, other resources I use are really smart people in the industry. Like, I read a lot. I love, like, that. Yeah. My wife will tell you, like, that I'm a book collector, not a book reader. And it's large part because I'm reading... I'm reading, like, stuff about baseball on, you know, on articles all the time. Like, I'm constantly listening to podcasts. I'm constantly reading articles. You know, Vlad Sedler's Fab article is, like, a must read every week. Love what Vlad does. You know, for prospects, you know, Matt Thompson is, like, my favorite prospect dude. Mm-hmm. You know, I read anything that he writes. You know, for podcasts, you know, the RotoWire podcast, like, they do a fantastic job.
Sunday night one specifically. Yeah. The whole thing is great. I will cape for all of them. Mm-hmm. But with my limited podcast listening time these days, the Sunday is the one I cannot miss. Scott and Jeff, for me, just hanging out with them. You're usually in the chat. I'm in the chat a lot of the times with a lot of other great people. Our boy PJ, who's in the fantasy community and in a lot of streams and everything. Love chatting with him. You know, there's characters in there that I'm not going to name because I'm not trying to be nasty to them, but, like, there's people that they like to say crazy things in that chat too. But it's a lot of fun. The Sunday night, if you're available, go to YouTube, go search RotoWire Fantasy Baseball. It usually starts around 10 Central, and it's a blast for an hour and a half. They're really engaging with the chat all the time too. And just listening to Jeff Erickson and Scott Jenstead is awesome. I love it. And people in the chat are answering questions too, because they can't answer every one. So you'll get smart people and someone like me. So smart people and dumb people in there answering. I said it before Justin could, answering the questions and trying to help people out, you know, like, oh, who should I start here? And, you know, oh, well, maybe I would start this guy because he's going to Oakland or whatever the case may be. So stuff like that is great. What about when you're trying to get the jump on, like, let's say prospects, what do you do for prospecting? Do you do anything, or do you just wait till they get called up?
I don't do a lot for prospects because there's only so much bandwidth I've got.
I was, like, just about to say your bandwidth, like, has to be too stretched to really just absorb all the prospect stuff.
I'm playing in 20 something redraft leagues, and then I've got my dynasty and, you know, keeper leagues and stuff. So I outsource, like, I really do, like, you know, guys like James Anderson, guys like Matt Thompson, guys like Chris Clegg and Eric Cross and the Welsh. And, like, I, you know, I have like a bunch of like those guys that what I do is I have a sheet that takes the ranks of all of my prospect guys. Mm-hmm. And it averages together. And that's how I come up with my own personal, like for Dynasty Leagues, that's how I come up with my own personal that's prospect awesome. Ranks, you know, and it's a massive sheet. And then I just update it usually about every 2 weeks to a month. Sweet. And then I just make sure I'm following those guys. Cause when, you know, someone like Chris Clegg or Matt Thompson goes, hey, like this guy is going to be up here soon. You're going to want to grab him. I listen to him. Like, and you got to kind of trust the people that you trust. So finding like, you know, John Sickles back in the day was like the guy that I love.
Oh man. Yeah. That's a throwback. Like, Johnny right? Sick, dude.
But now there's like a million prospect guys. So find like the 3, 4, 5 guys that you really trust that have a good track record and kind of follow them. Like, you know, and because you don't want to get oversaturated.
True. You get there are a too million many different guys. Opinions. You can find the positive and negative opinion on damn near every player.
Yeah.
And it's because prospecting is hard, not because, you know, these people are like bad or something like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you have your different takes based on what you see, just the way we do about pro players, about major mm-hmm. league players. Obviously, minor leaguers are pros too. So, yeah, follow the guys you like. James Anderson, you mentioned, Matt Thompson, Chris Clegg, the Welsh. Like, mm-hmm.
Drew Wheeler is another guy, like, you know, and I don't want to like leave anybody out because there are.
Yeah.
Like, if you look at my sheet, there's probably like 15 names on there.
Oh, that's amazing.
That like it's a pain in the ass to like redo every, you know,
I bet because
it goes like 500. I'm sure there is, but I'm not smart either. If I was smart, I would need other people.
I am a moron, but I could help you fix like that. You should be able to copy paste them into each their own tab and then the front page updates. I could maybe help you with something like that. But anyway, that's a great way to kind of keep up on the prospects. My bandwidth has gotten such to where I do pay more attention to the guys in the minors, but I still rely on the folks that you're talking about that like when someone comes up, I want to know what they think because I don't think I'm like some great minor league guy to begin with. So I do my best that I can to keep up on the name. So I at least know them. And I always talk about how OOTP helps me do that too. When I'm playing the base game and like Chase DeLauder becomes a superstar, I'm like, well, now I know who Chase DeLauder is. And he might not become a superstar in real life, but because he did an OOTP, I now at least am in tune with him and I'm following him now. And so he's not a complete surprise name when he pops up.
I'm also, and I think this is part of like my quote unquote daily prep or my in-season prep. I don't know if it's a daily thing. I'm a rabbit hole chaser. And that can be really, really frustrating, but it's also really, really valuable. So like I will hear a name or I will hear somebody in the industry that I trust talk about someone and it'll send me on a rabbit hole. So like Jordan Westberg, like I think is a really, really good example of a guy that I'm about to go down a rabbit hole with because I've had my feelings on Jordan Westberg. And like mm-hmm. you said, you're on the fence. Well, my conversation with Dave McDonald and the Friends of Fantasy Benefits podcast, he's huge on Jordan Westberg. Okay. So I got to figure out like that gives me an opportunity to challenge myself and go like, so one of the things I said, like I'm going to sit down here one of these nights where maybe like it's a short slate or something and like pull up a swing comparison, like look at his swing from last year, put it next to his swing from this year and see like it allows me to go, okay, hey, I'm going to break apart everything I need. And, you know, the things you should be looking at are those core skills, right? You know, where's the exit velocity at? Has something changed to like change that exit velocity? Or is he just hitting the ball hard for right now?
Exactly. You know,
is he making better contact or not making better contact in the zone? You know, being willing to do the kind of the rabbit hole chasing, I think, is really important.
I totally agree. And hey, tonight might be that night. Their last game starts at 6 and there's only one. And you can have the draft on one screen and then you can do your Jordan Westberg analysis on the other. Another thing I do, it's very simple. I look at the box scores every single day. It's the first thing I do. I love doing it. And, you know, I have a show where I do it. I'm not using that to, it wasn't a segue there, incidental segue, if you will, 3 days a week, Monday, Thursday, Friday, where I go over the box scores on my stream, twitch.tv/sport. But every other day I'm going through them too. I love just, it keeps you in tune with things. Oh my God, this guy has 7 steals. And then like you're talking about rabbit hole. It'll lead me to say, I got to go look at this now. I got to see what the hell Bryce Terang is doing. How does he have 80 gorillion steals? By the way, did you see the play that Varsho just had on Isbell?
Isbell's hit.
So Isbell ripped a triple, and it was almost the same exact type of play. And listen, Varsho's a really good defender, but I wonder if Isbell was running around the bases like, you're not me, brother. You can't catch that. Because he went for the same kind of catch, and it went over his glove, and Isbell got a triple out of it. They need to give this game a rest right now. There is too much rain right now. None of these guys can get a grip on anything. Anyway, but yeah, box scores, staying on top of the waivers, like who's available and what they're doing. Outsourcing the prospect stuff, unless you are a prospect fan, and really just trying to stay in tune as much as I can. You can't cover everything. Don't be afraid to lean on resources. That's why we have jobs, because people are open. You know, they got their lives going, so they lean on us to do things and bridge some of those gaps. But I think if you can only do a couple things, box scoring every day to try to see what's going on in every game, and following 2, 3, 4 prospect guys that you really like will really help, because prospects are just such a big part of fantasy now. They have really changed the landscape. And if you don't know who any of these guys are coming up, you're going to be behind the curve. It's just that simple. So I think hopefully that helps some. If you have any further questions that you want us to expound on with regards to that, let us know. But we got to get you going, because you got to get your garage door fixed.
Yeah, the workers here out in my front yard right now. So
all right. Well, we will talk tomorrow morning. We'll go over the 2-start slate and maybe a couple of these other questions, depending on what sort of time we have. I'll talk to you bright and early tomorrow morning. Congratulations again on 19 years, brother. I love you.
Thank you. Love you too.